This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
All right. Kirsty Spragon is here tonight. Super excited to have Kirsty here. International television star. So Kirsty, she attacks life like it's a big freaking hunk of chocolate cake. Now, if that were me, it would be a big pizza with a couple pitchers of beer, but you get the idea, right? She goes for it, and she's done it her whole career. So right now, her primary focus, and I say primary focus because she's always got a lot of different things, a lot of different plates spinning all the time. She's the executive producer and host of Kirsty TV, and she's filming that right here in California, in Los Angeles. But in addition, she's an internationally renowned speaker. In fact, by this time next week, she will have already given several talks on another continent. She's going to jump on a plane and do a whirlwind tour of Australia. She's also getting an award while she's over there for speaking from a national speaking society. So the woman can speak. Okay. She's also an author. As I told you before, she wrote Work As If You Own It, which is a great book. I recommend it to all of you. It's really the idea that you own your own career. Like, that is yours. Whether you own the company you work for or not, doesn't matter. You own your own future. And never forget that. Take hold of that future and build upon it. It's a great book. A lot of tips on sales and networking. You should definitely check it out. Speaking of sales, Kirsty has been selling her whole life. Sales is the foundation of entrepreneurial success. If you can sell, you can do pretty much anything in business. And Kirsty has proved that. At a relatively young age, she became the number one or the top 1% of all of the RE/MAX agents in the world. There's 121,000 agents, and she was at the top 1% of all of those agents in productivity. And she did that with relatively little experience, but with a hell of a lot of enthusiasm and passion. She's continued her success in the speaking world, not only with that award she's about to receive, but in 2011, she received the Breakthrough Speaker of the Year Award by the National Speakers Association. The Today Show called her the next Oprah, so we're hoping that we can help make that happen here today. And her online show is relatively new here in the States, but it's already up to 100,000 views, and it's growing week by week, month over month. So she's got a ton of momentum on that show. I really encourage you to go check out Kirsty TV. You won't regret it. Very inspirational, empowering stories. She also recently spoke at TEDx, and that talk has also been, not surprisingly, extremely well received, even tweeted by Oprah, the real Oprah, herself. So let's welcome Kirsty to our class.
Well, that is the first time I've ever been chanted on stage, so I will never forget that. Thank you. So we're here. We're out at UCSB University, and it's my first time out here. I've been to Santa Barbara, but I'm really loving it, and thank you for such a great welcome. So Destination Unknown, that's what I'm going to talk about tonight, and you're all about to head off on your own Destination Unknowns. Does anyone remember that song? Yeah, it's a great song, isn't it? I left my job, my house, my car, and my home. I'm headed for a destination I still don't know. So I'm jogging around a lake, and I'm running. I've got my iPod in, and I'm literally belting this out at the top of my lungs. People are looking at me like I'm a little bit strange. Cars are going past thinking that I'm a little bit of a weirdo. But I didn't care. I was so full of life, feeling so free, that it was just the most incredible feeling in the world. It was the day after I had gone in and told my boss there at the brokerage I worked at in real estate that I was going to be leaving. Now, I'm at the top of my game. Everything's going well. What am I doing? And yet, I'm feeling so free. Well, a few days before, I'd been in a hotel room in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. And I was sitting there and I was just feeling like something was missing. I wasn't really content. I didn't know what had happened, but I'd lost my passion for selling. And I just felt like there was something more that I wanted to be doing, and I didn't know what it was. So I sat there and I asked myself, what is it? What is it that is making you feel like this? What's going on? What do you want to do? And I heard this voice. It's funny when we start talking to ourselves, and you'll hear through my talk tonight that I highly recommend that you talk to yourself a lot more. So, because it's funny, you actually know what you want some of the time. So I asked myself and I said, I want to go and speak. I want to be a motivational speaker. And I had wanted to speak. I started at about 15. I was doing public speaking competitions in school. And it had been something that when you're in sales, you hear a lot of speakers, especially in real estate. You're always at conferences. You're always hearing motivational speakers. And so it was something that I had kind of watched a lot of people and thought, one day I want to make people feel like that. I want to inspire people and empower people. So I asked myself, well, what are you going to do then? Sitting there in that hotel room. So I called up one of my girlfriends and I called up my mom, and within an hour it had gone from I'm thinking about this to I think I'm actually going to do this. And then within 2 or 3 hours, it's like, okay, well, tomorrow I'm going back to Perth where I'm from and I'm going to tell my real estate broker that I'm leaving. So I was at the top of my game at that time. I had everything that I had worked years for, Mercedes, charity work, all the things that you think that you're on this path to achieve. And then all of a sudden, to get there and for it to not really be what I wanted was a really interesting place to be in and a really challenging place. So I made that decision, but let's go back a little bit. So I'm in my early 20s and I started traveling. I think that that's one of the best things you can do, to have a little bit of time traveling and exploring and seeing different worlds and cultures. I really believe that experiences are what transform us. Big and small ones. It doesn't have to just be travel. It could be doing a hobby like a new cooking class. But what is it for you? Because experiences are what stretch us, what help us grow, what help us become who we want to be. You know, when I think about this entrepreneurial journey, it's a lot like the book Eat, Pray, Love. Did anyone read the book or watch the movie? A few? Yeah. So it's about a lady who goes off on a journey of self-discovery and finds herself through traveling and eating pasta in Italy and praying in Bali or India. And she eats, prays and falls in love. And so for me, when I talk about destination unknown, it really is this entrepreneurial journey that is my own Eat, Pray, Love. This has been the greatest love affair of my life, being an entrepreneur and building my businesses and changing careers. And it has also been the most incredible adventure. And I think that if you go down that entrepreneurial path, that that's what it has to be. It's like it's in your blood. There's some people who want to get married and want to have children. And there's other people I have, you know, being a motivational speaker, I have a ton of friends who like to climb Everest and get in kayaks and do crazy stuff like spend 90 days in them and get out at the other end and have all their muscles wasted away. but my adventure and my love has been being an entrepreneur. Having the faith in yourself to believe when you're in fetal position and thinking, what have I done? Because I tell you what, 5 days later, I had a journal entry when I had gone from dancing and singing Destination Unknown to 5 days later, I'm there with chocolate wrappers all around. And I'm like, I don't know if I feel sick because I'm nauseous about this decision or because I've eaten so much chocolate. But that's part of knowing yourself. You know, part of this journey, should you decide to go out and become an entrepreneur, is really a personal growth journey. And I was thinking about what I'm going to talk about tonight, and I was thinking about what I wish I'd told myself or wish I'd known back then. And that's probably one of the greatest things. I wish that I had understood that this isn't just about a career or a business journey, that this truly is a journey of self-discovery and a journey of you becoming your best self. When you learn how to sell, it takes emotional intelligence, interpersonal skills, and soft skills. Did anyone get taught those in high school? You know, was there a rapport building 101? Usually not. So we go out into the world and all of a sudden we have to have all of these skills to sell ourselves, to build businesses that are really personal skills. And what I know to be true is that when you develop them for business, you develop them for life and you have a richer, fuller life. You have richer, fuller relationships and friendships and family connections than you ever could have imagined. So for me, that's been one of those things. When I think about living the dream, isn't that what we all think about? Getting the Mercedes, doing charity work, whatever it might be for you, running a multinational business, whatever your dream is. We think that living the dream looks like that. But most of the time it actually looks like this. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard. I can't say it enough. It's hard. You're there in your pajamas. You work nearly every single day. But the other part of hard is you love it. You love it. You love it. There's nothing that I would rather do than get up every morning and sit in my pajamas by 6 or 7 a.m. and usually be there till midnight tweeting and Facebooking and building the online show or booking speaking gigs or whatever it is. You know, when it was real estate, it was marketing and promotion. But there are days when you don't feel like it and you're tired and it's hard. But most of the time, you know, you have that desire. So you have to have an incredibly big why you're doing this. It has to be something that's going to sustain you through those days where you're pulling your hair out and you're feeling tired. It's not the mountains we conquer, but ourselves. Who's heard that quote before? Yeah? So this is a quote by Sir Edmund Hillary, one of the first, I believe, to do Everest. So for me, I'd heard this quote a lot. I love motivational quotes and inspirational quotes, and I'd heard it quite a lot. But I never really got it. It was like one of those ones that just kind of went over your head. I didn't get it. I was in Africa, in Tanzania, just after I'd made that decision to leave real estate and to go into the speaking side of things. And my 21-year-old brother, I decided to take him with me because I wanted him to have an experience of how others live and to really, you know, as I said, I think that they stretch you, they help you grow, they give you courage and confidence and independence and all sorts of skills when you start experiencing life. So I took him with me and we went over there. Now, I had just left my real estate career and was moving into speaking. I hadn't had time to plan or think about anything, and I'd literally booked this trip. I'd always wanted to go and see the Silverback Mountain Gorillas. So I book it and then show up thinking that we're on like a little tour, that the gorillas are going to be here, we're going to photograph them. No, 6-hour hike. I'm not prepared. I'm not fit. I don't have the right shoes. And all of a sudden, the head chatter starts. I can't do it. I'm going to get tired. Maybe I should stop now, because if I get halfway, I'm going to have to come back. It's going to be like, I'm better off stopping now. This is like incessant chatter going on and on and on. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, what would I do in business? First thing I do is shift my state. I always used to use music, you know, like Rocky music. Oh, great tunes. I mean, you think about it. Like, how many times are you at a club? For me, it's back in the 80s. But you're there and you're tired and then your favourite song comes on. You're going to be up all night, aren't you? So I thought, okay, I'm going to sing. I'm going up this hill. My brother's behind, who's your age, remember, very embarrassed by me. And I'm singing Like a Virgin, Madonna. It's the first song that came to mind. And he's thinking, what are you doing? So basically, I thought to myself, I've got to sing. I've got to get. And it worked. Other people started singing in the group. We had a Sherpa with us who was basically pushing me at times up this mountain. And we had a guide who was, by the time we got to the top, about an hour from finding the gorillas. And literally, they're tracking gorillas. They are not in a certain place, as I had anticipated. They move, so you have to track them. So they're macheteing through this forest, and by this point, I'm feeling like I'm building IKEA furniture. Yeah? The ladies in the room know what I'm talking about. It was even for some of the guys. Like, it's hard building IKEA furniture. There's always extra screws. So I'm feeling like I'm, you know, part of like a warrior or something, and I'm really getting into it, but you know, you have to find ways on this entrepreneurial journey. It is that mountain. And it isn't about the mountain. It's our mind that we conquer. It's not the mountains. So we really have to get that. That's probably been one of the biggest lessons for me, is that we can do anything. And the only thing that will stop you is what's up here. When you start to listen to that chatter and not find a way to switch it off, you need to be willing to have self-analysis, to figure out what your fears are. And that can be incredibly uncomfortable. You know, one of the things I do at the end of a day, at the end of a presentation, at the end of a pitch with an important client, at the end of the week, and even at the end of the month and year, I love reflecting. I ask myself these three questions. What's working? What's not working? And what do I need to do differently? What's working? What's not? And what do I need to do differently? And it's important to ask all three. What's working? You've got to pat yourself on the back sometimes. You've got to be willing to acknowledge the things that you're doing really well that are working for you that you can keep building on. What's not working for you? That can be tough and uncomfortable and icky, but you've got to be willing to be introspective and figure out what's not working and then be willing to do something different. You know, I remember being in a meeting pitching for an important deal with a client, and I knew as soon as I left the room that I didn't get the business. If you're willing to ask yourself those questions, you can figure out why. And what I figured out is I'd gone into consultant mode before I built rapport. I'd gone into advisor mode because I knew I was right, and I knew that what I was telling them was right for them, but I hadn't built rapport. If you don't have a connection with a client, if you don't have rapport, people aren't going to listen to your advice no matter how right it is. But if I wasn't willing to ask myself what didn't work, what do I need to do differently, I probably would have just kept having meetings and not really had the insight to figure out what I was doing wrong. So you've got to be willing to know yourself. And that comes back to my point on talking to yourself. Asking yourself these questions, having conversations with yourself about your fears. What is working? You know, one of my favorite books is by Dr. Seuss. Yes, there is nothing better than a Dr. Seuss book when you are having an all-out fear attack. So I have a video up on my website, on my YouTube channel called The Kmart Meltdown. And someone said to me, well, I can understand you have a meltdown just because you were in Kmart. But that wasn't what happened. But it was just one of these days I got a bit teary and I was a bit emotional. And I remember thinking, like, what's going on? So I went home and I got my go-tos, apple pie and the comforter. Is that what you call it over here? Like a blanket, a dunya? So I'm on the couch. I'm like, what's going on? And this is, like, I kid you not, you're all going to have one of these moments as an entrepreneur. You'll be in fetal position on the couch because that's what fear does to you. It stops you in your track, and it's designed to. Chemically, we go into fight or flight, just like those adventurers climbing up that mountain. When you get too close to something, when you want something so badly, when you start to go into self-doubt, there'll be moments when you will be there with your apple pie or whatever your fix is. But I'm sitting there and I'm like, what's going on? And what it was is I was launching the next day. And so again, when you're willing to ask yourself and really sit with the discomfort and the feelings, like, you always know. And so what that meant for me is I've sold everything I own, left Australia, left a highly successful career, moved to America with two suitcases to build an online TV show, and I have a web series to show for this. Yeah, that was it. So you can understand why I'm eating apple pie and I'm under the comfort and I'm having a little bit of a moment and my Kmart meltdown, because I was fearful, like, well, what if this doesn't work? What if it doesn't pay off? What if nobody watches? What if they watch and they think it's crap? So it takes being willing to step out of your comfort zone, to be fearful. And in those moments, Dr. Seuss comes in really handy. This is one of my favorite excerpts. You'll be on your way. You'll be seeing great sights. You'll join the high flyers who soar to great heights, except when you don't, because sometimes you won't. I'm sorry to say, but sadly it's true that bang-ups and hang-ups can happen to you. You'll go down from the lurch with an unpleasant bump, and then the chances are you'll be in for a slump. And when you're in a slump, you're not in for much fun, because unslumping yourself is not easily done. And so unslumping yourself is something that you have to learn. This is another thing of knowing yourself, figuring out what is it for you that shifts your state. Is it putting on Like a Virgin by Madonna? Is it changing to Katy Perry's Roar or listening to the Rocky Anthem? Is it watching a great movie? Is it backing off and just giving yourself a day on the couch with apple pie and letting the tears flow and sitting there and watching some movies? What is it that you need to do to unslump yourself quickly so that you can keep moving forward with your dreams and your desires? Because it will come up at different moments and different times, because it is that journey. And you have to embrace that discomfort. You have to be willing to sink into the discomfort, because anything new is challenging for us. When you're not good at something, oh my gosh, there is nothing worse. So there's this model called conscious competence, conscious incompetence. It's a quadrant. And you Google it and it comes up. And basically you start and you're unconscious of how incompetent you are. This is bliss. This is like the best place to be. Everyone wants to stay here. But if you're doing something new, anything for the first time, anything that stretches you even slightly, you're going to go through to the next quadrant, my favorite corner. You become conscious of how incompetent you are. And let me tell you, this is not fun. It's like I just hate being in this corner. But what I also know is that it's part of the process. It's a model. That's how it works. If you want to get from quadrant one to quadrant four, you've got to be willing to go through quadrant two, no matter how much you dislike it. This day and age, everyone wants everything now. Everyone wants everything fast. It doesn't work like that. When you're doing something new, you have to be willing to go through the process of it. You have to be willing to sit there in that discomfort and know that you're not good at it. When I first got up and spoke, so this is something I've been, since I was 15, I've wanted to speak. I've seen all of these amazing speakers. I get up. This is what it was like. I was self-soothing around the groin area. I had such dry mouth that when you watch all the early videos, there's this tapping sound through the audio. It was not good. I was had to be conscious of how incompetent I was in front of hundreds of people. But what would have happened if I'd stopped there? I would never have realized my dreams. I would never have achieved what I wanted to achieve. So we have to be willing to be really uncomfortable with people seeing how incompetent we are as well. You know, when I first started speaking, there were people I invited to see me speak who probably would never book me. But I had to be willing to go back to them and say, I've grown. I'm a better presenter now. Come and see me again. I've got better material. That's a hard thing to admit, not just to yourself, but to have to go back to other people and admit it. But what was the choice? Not to say anything and they wouldn't book me and they'd probably tell everyone else that I was a terrible presenter. You know, so sometimes you have to be willing to not only be uncomfortable in yourself, but uncomfortable out there in front of other people. You have to be willing to let people see that side. You don't have to know, you just have to go. I think that this one applies to everybody in this room because you don't know where you're going. In 6 short months, most of you are going to be out there on your own destination unknown. And I think that we think we have to have it all mapped out. I certainly did. But it changes. You know, what I know is that everything in my life has been a part of a jigsaw puzzle to my success. It started with real estate and then it moved into speaking and to becoming an author and now into television. But without the real estate, I couldn't have done any of those other things. So you don't have to know in the beginning because it might morph and change. Something that you start doing could be you have no idea why you're doing it in the beginning. It may seem so small and insignificant, but there's a skill that you're picking up there that becomes a part of your jigsaw pieces for your entrepreneurial journey. I think Bill Gates is a really great example of that. There were a lot of things that he did early on that ended up being like small things. Like I think the iTunes font was something that he'd worked on in an earlier job. So you have no idea sometimes how these small things that become so significant later play into your jigsaw piece of life. I recently, a few years ago, before Zig Ziglar, some of you will know, was one of the greatest motivational speakers of all time. He was in Dallas, Texas, at an event. Now, I didn't know he was going to be there. I was going over to this event to start looking at the US market, start thinking about building my business over here. And I've showed up thinking, you don't have to know, you just have to go. I didn't know why I felt drawn to this event, what it was, but sometimes that's when the magic happens. You know, that was, for me, an opportunity to meet Zig Ziglar. And there were a lot of other celebrities that I met on that trip to the US and was able to interview Marsha Cross and some incredible people. So you don't have to know, you just have to go. Sometimes you have to be willing to put yourself out there, to be uncomfortable, to stretch yourself, to have a new experience. And you have to be willing to have big balls. Yeah, don't Google big balls for to get a photo on the internet because all kinds of things came up. So big kahunas though. So I was in Miami when I first moved here. As I said, I've sold everything. I'm here with my 2 suitcases. I'm at this conference. I don't know why I'm going. It's costing a fortune. I'm thinking hopefully this will pay off. I get there and it turns out that Dennis Swanson, who's the head of Fox, gave Oprah her show, runs 35 stations, is there getting an award. Now, not only do you not have to go, you just have to go and show up. You have to have the balls when the opportunity's there to take it. Before we started, you were asked how many of the speakers you've reached out to. Now, I would say most of you, those some have reached out, most didn't, it's usually because you feel uncomfortable or you think, would they really want to hear from me? I'm just a young student. Whatever it might be that's going on in your head, you have to be willing to take those opportunities. People reach out to me, I'm always happy to hear from them. Stop that dialogue, whatever that self-talk is, and have the balls to go after what you want and take the opportunity when it's there. I went up to Dennis. I said to him, Dennis, do you do any charity work? He said, yes. I said, great. I'm a charity case and I need some help. He thought, he laughed, and I sent him a copy of my book. 5 weeks later, I'm driving in the car and I get this call on speaker. It's Dennis Swanson. I'm literally in the car like, oh my God, like it's Dennis Swanson. He's calling me. It was hilarious. 40 minutes he gave me on the phone. Because I was willing to go up to him, have the courage to say something that made me a little bit uncomfortable, could have been an awkward experience. Now, I want to have a talk show. It's kind of cool that the head of Fox calls and spends 40 minutes on the phone with you. Now, it wasn't just about the opportunity for me. It was a reminder that magic can happen when you're willing to put yourself out there. Because showing up here with two suitcases, I was beginning to wonder if I was a little bit cray-cray. And I've been watching too much of the Kardashians. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, what am I doing? And then that day, it's like a little kiss from the universe that reminded me of my why and said, keep going and keep doing it because you never know who you're going to meet and it only takes one. So for a week, I had that plastered all over my room. My mum would ring me. I was really just having one of those weeks where it was all too hard. And I had, it only takes one. It only takes one. So for me, it's about being willing to go somewhere. You don't have to know, but be willing to go somewhere. That could be going out for dinner with a networking client, going out for an opportunity, going doing a hobby. Where can you go that puts you closer to your dream? You know, a lot of people say to me, oh, I want to be a graphic designer, but they're working as a hairdresser or whatever it might be. Even if you're working as a receptionist, as a graphic designer, at least you're closer to your dream. Go there. Start there. What is it that you can be doing? For me, it was going to LA. It was being willing to come out here and have a go. When I got here, I engraved this bracelet. It says, a pinch of delusion, a dash of audacity, and a shot of courage. Because that was really what it was going to take. I knew that coming out here, people were going to think I was deluded. I had to have the audacity to show up as if I was already someone and be willing to follow that dream. And I had to have the courage to stay the path because there's plenty of days where you want to just sit in fetal position on the couch with apple pie. So have that courage of a lion. For me, it's also about figuring out what you want. What do you really want? And as I said, you don't have to know forever, but what do you want right now? What do you want in the next 6 months? Because it's going to come around before you know it. Do you have any ideas already? What are you thinking about? For me, it starts with just brainstorming. I remember seeing Richard Branson's to-do list. It was a handwritten list that looked a lot like mine. And that, for me, was such a powerful moment. I thought, Richard Branson, Oprah Winfrey, Donald Trump, whoever it might be, they started with a handwritten to-do list just like me and just like you. You know, a lot of my business ideas started on napkins in restaurants with friends, brainstorming over ideas. You know, Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook, started in their living room. Mine was in the kitchen. You know, what is it that you want to start doing in the next 6 months? You were asked earlier, are you on Twitter? Are you on Facebook? Are you on LinkedIn? You know, they're all the things. Someone said to me the other week, when do I go off and follow my dream? You know, if I can't afford it and I don't have the money. And I said to them, just do it, but be prepared. Because I think telling people just do it is like irresponsible because not everyone can just do it. But you can just do it and be prepared. 6 months before I started selling real estate, I was working in the property management rental department and I told my boss that I wanted to transition through into commission sales. You don't earn any money there. It's 100% commission. So it's like the same as being an entrepreneur and running your own business. And that was where the idea of work as if you own it, which I titled my book, came from, that you had to work as if you owned it. So I'm sitting there 6 months before And there were so many things that I could do before I launched the business. Websites, social media, business cards, networking, skill development, getting out there and going to other home opens. Or when I moved into speaking, I went to national speakers associations and watched other speakers. So whatever it is that you're thinking about doing, start hanging out in that world, start developing those skills, start building those contacts online. And even if they don't go anywhere, they'll lead to something else, or they'll give you more of an insight into what you want to be doing. If you aren't clear, that's the fastest way to get clear. Once you start doing, you know, when I first started speaking, my speeches were on a whole different topic. And through speaking those topics, I got really clear that I didn't want to talk about that. But if I hadn't at least started sharing that material, I don't think I would have gotten closer to figuring out what it is I really wanted to say. Writing was the same. There's a lot of stuff I wrote that I didn't publish. I really feel like it's in the doing and the beginning that you get the clarity. You start to figure out what it is that you truly want. I need someone to come and plug a battery in for us. Yeah, we have one here. If you want to open that up and take care of it, it's in there. Thank you. Yeah. So Martin Luther King did not say, "I have a strategic plan." He said, "I have a dream." And it all starts with that. Well, it's true. Imagine if he had have said that. It wouldn't sound so cool. So what is your dream? It's the dream. It's the why that keeps you getting up and keeps you courageous and keeps you fighting for your dream and your entrepreneurial adventure every day. So what is it that you truly dream of? How do you want to leave a legacy? What difference do you want to make? Those might seem like really big ideas now, but as I said, it's through the doing that I got closer to it. I didn't know in my 20s that I would end up doing what I'm doing today, but each one led a different experience and each one got me closer to figuring out what it is I want to do. And this was probably one of the core lessons when I was thinking back on what I wish I knew and what I wish I had a better understanding of. One of those things was that you have to figure out how to do it your way. You're going to get told a lot of different things when you're out there. And you have to be willing to come back to your own core values, your own beliefs, what works for you. Going into sales was a very male-dominated industry. Everything was about closing the deal, having a script and dialogue. What's it going to take to get you into this house tonight? Very icky, very manipulative. Didn't work for me. I'd go into the office and there'd be a guy sitting there making 500 cold calls. There'd be somebody else out door knocking. I did door knocking one day. I had my mum drive the getaway car just in case. And it was just not my thing. But what worked for me was networking, was building great relationships with people, was caring enough about them to connect. I was in a sales training session where someone said, "Stop having Nescafe appointments." You have Nescafe over here? Coffee? Stop having coffee appointments, like chatting with people. I looked at the homes that I had on the market, and out of the 15, 12 of them had come from Nescafe appointments I'd had with people a year or two before. So I learned very quickly to listen to my own intuition, to follow what was working for me. You know, people think that business has to look, you know, even the other day somebody was talking about the Wolf of Wall Street and in sales. And I said to them, like, that just wasn't me. And there's a lot of, you know, a bad reputation out there in general around business and around sales. It doesn't have to be like that. I am still friends with over 50% of the clients that are up on this slide. I still talk to them on Facebook and Twitter, and they're in Australia. They're people I dealt with 10, 20 years ago. So it can look however you want it to look. And for me, it was going out V8 car racing with clients and picking them up in a limousine at the end of the year to recognize all the business that they'd given me. It was going to bowling events and having wine and cheese tasting nights. And it was finding ways to have fun together. You know, I coined this word, FERC, and it's about combining, it's not a naughty word, it's about combining fun and work. The first two letters of fun, the last two letters of work, to be FERC. Because I was sitting there one day writing my book and my friends are like, "Come out, like, what are you doing? You're working away. It's so horrible," and really just giving me a hard time. And I literally remember thinking, "I am not working. What can I call this for you to understand?" And the next day I was speaking somewhere and I talked about FERC, and then FERC took on a life of its own. But It's really about understanding that we can blur the lines between work and play. That instead of having a boring boardroom meeting, you can go and play tennis or golf with a client. That instead of sitting in the boardroom, you can go have coffee or a dinner. That you can, instead of sitting in an office, take your laptop down to the beach or go to the Four Seasons in Maui. It can look however you want it to look. It can be full of fun and adventure and great friendships and relationships with clients who deal with you for two decades or more. So what's it going to look like for you? You know, if there was one thing more than anything else that I wish I understood earlier on, it is the power of connections, the power of relationship building and networking. This is what will differentiate you from anybody else. This is what will make or break your success. You can have all the skills in the world. You can have the greatest product in the world. But if no one knows about it, if no one likes you, if no one wants to do business with you, you're not going to get very far. So how do we develop those relationships? How do we develop those skills? And this really comes back to that idea of knowing yourself, being willing to be aware. You know, when I first started out, I was the crazy card lady. You know, I thought I had to meet everyone in a room and get their cards. And now I realize that most people never call you back. You have to be willing to do the work. You know, when I first left real estate and I moved into speaking, I shared this example once. I met over 1,000 people in 3 months. And of those 1,000 people, only one person followed me back, called me or followed up in some way. One. I did all the work with the others. But I would say I'm more successful than 99% of those people. So that is not about ego. That's just a fact. You do the following up, you stay in touch with people, you build great relationships and you connect, it pays off, it pays dividends. So what are you doing to connect with people? And the other thing about connections that I wish I knew earlier on is it's just like friends. You don't want to do business with people you don't like. You don't want to spend two decades of your life dealing with horrible people who are manipulative and don't share your values or ethics or morals. So get rid of the people and the clients that you don't want in your life. I honestly do not have a single client that I speak for now who I do not love. I think that you start to attract it when you start to say yes to what you want, when you start to get clear about who you are and the kind of people that you want to work with and play with. You know, if I'm going to have these people in my life in the work playground and the life playground, and we're going to be firking, then it really is. We're going to be firking together. Then, you know, you really want to make sure they're people you like. So for me, connecting is a life skill. It's not just about business. Learning to be a great salesperson was the byproduct of what I got out of building great relationships. You know, that was just the icing on the cake. But the thing I got along the way is I learned how to be a better friend, a better person. I learned how to communicate more effectively. I learned how to connect on a deeper, richer level. I learned how to be more vulnerable and open with the people that are around me. So what can you do to increase the power of your connections? You know, there's three things that when I do my longer keynotes I focus on, but I'll just give you a short synopsis. And one of them is being there. Being there and being present and in the moment with people is so important. We show up and we're busy, we're distracted, we're tired, we've got things going on, but people notice it. Don't you notice when you're on the phone with a friend and they're clicking away, maybe they're Facebooking while they talk to you? Most of the time we sense it, right? We notice that people aren't present with us, and how does it make us feel? Unappreciated, unimportant. So it's such a simple thing that we can make our clients and our friends and our family feel valued when we're present with them, when we care enough to connect. I think that we have started to see service as being subservient, that we're of service. It can be a beautiful gift to care enough about clients, to care enough about people who are doing business with you, to show them that you're interested in them as a person and to get to know them. And then sharing is about being willing to share a part of who you are as well. You know, when I first started out in business and sales, you hear a lot of the cliche sort of sayings like, don't mix business with pleasure and don't do business with friends. Well, for me, it was always about melding those two worlds. No, my clients don't have to all become my best friends, but if you want loyalty and trust, you can't have a superficial connection with someone. If you want loyalty and trust and the longevity of your career and deeper, more meaningful relationships, it can't be about superficial conversations. So how do you start to share a part of who you are and be willing to blur those lines between work and play? Let people in, be a little bit vulnerable. So for me, there's some of the things that I wish that I had known when I was younger. And what I would tell my younger self is to trust more, to have more faith that I can do it, to worry less, to understand that this is the greatest adventure of my life, that this is the greatest love affair of my life, to know that relationships are what matters, to stay in touch with people, to have deeper, more meaningful relationships, to be more vulnerable earlier on in my career. There's so many things that I wish that I had known, but most importantly, it's that this is the greatest adventure of my life. So I hope that all of you get to have a great adventure in your entrepreneurial journey and that it is the greatest love of your life. And I look forward to staying in touch with you. Thank you.
And it is an adventure, I can tell you that. First question. It's always the hard one, right? The first question is always the hardest. Don't be shy. Okay, right here.
So you talk about how people have an emotional intelligence and how important that is in sales. Are there people who are emotionally dumb, for lack of a better word, and are there ways that people can be emotionally smarter?
Definitely. That is such a great question. So I don't think anyone's emotionally dumb. I just think that maybe they haven't developed it. You know, when I was in my 20s, I was surprisingly a lot shyer than I am now. Even my younger sister, I can see there's 10, 15 years between myself and my younger siblings, and I can really see how they're growing in sort of that 20 to 25, 30 age gap. You really start to develop those skills. And it has come from experiences. It's come from them going to new places and being willing to be uncomfortable. When we stay with our group of friends and we hang out with people we know, we don't stretch ourselves. We don't have to have awkward, uncomfortable conversations. When you go traveling, even if it was to LA for the weekend on your own, it doesn't have to be flying across the world. When you're on your own, you have to use new skills. You have to be willing to talk to someone, be brave enough to, I mean, people laugh that I go to movies on my own. Seriously, what's wrong with going to a movie? Who in here would go to a movie on their own? Less than half. So the rest of you, there's nothing wrong with going to the movie on your own. My sister actually said to me the other week, I was in Hawaii, and I mean, I only posted a couple of selfies. It wasn't like hundreds, but she said to me that you need to post more photos with other people or people will think you're a loner. And I cracked up because I thought, well, what's wrong with that? But that was more about her own insecurities. She's younger, about being on her own. So what, you know, it really is about being willing to put yourself out there, to stretch yourself, to continue to grow. You know, when I first lived with one of my roommates, Lenny, she was from Czech and she had a little bit of a language issue and she hated networking. And I didn't know this till later. I'm dragging her along to places and she's like, Kirsty, I wanted to throw up. Like, I felt so ill just being there. So, you know, but now she's a master networker. So you've got to be willing to do new things and be uncomfortable, because the first time you do any of those things, it's not going to feel great. Thank you. Thank you.
What was your like first career move when you got to LA?
Oh, so, you know, I'm moving here to develop this show. I've never produced, I've never hosted, I've never interviewed anybody, but I have this vision to develop this talk show. And so it was really writing, and it was very similar when I left real estate and went into speaking. I wrote a list of all the people I knew, speakers I'd heard present at events that I'd stayed in touch with because I wanted to go into speaking one day. People who I knew were in LA. I'd been coming in and out, visiting on holidays, getting to know people, building up relationships. So I was literally writing a list of like everyone I knew who might be able to help or might know someone. And then it was a list of what do I need to do? I need to find a producer. I need to find a director. I need to go to interview classes. I need to book into some networking groups. I need to find some people who know how to go viral on YouTube. So it really starts with that brainstorming of lists of who you know and what skills you need, and then just checking them off and going one at a time down that list.
So you mentioned networking with Dennis Swanson, and that's obviously like a one-time opportunity because he's such a big guy, I think. My question is, so what do you think about when you have the opportunity to network with a person like that, like a high-up figure, but you feel like that you don't have enough going on entrepreneurially for yourself to really have your one shot and take it, you know, where you have this opportunity and you have enough to present to where you would be memorable as opposed to prolonging it and maybe hoping for another time when you have more to show?
Yeah. Look, Dennis doesn't know this yet, so we'll share this on cable TV. No, but so what I would say is that you take the opportunity when it's there, because otherwise I may never have seen him again. So I took the opportunity and I built a connection. That's all that's important in the beginning, that we have some kind of connection. Then I can go back later. And just as I said to you, when I started speaking, I was a terrible speaker, but I had to go back to some of those people, but at least I had the connection. They liked me as a person. If there's one thing I know, it's that we do business with people we like. We do business with people we like. So if people like you, they'll forgive a lot of things. And you can go back to them when you're further along. So now I have that connection there. Once the show's up and running and I'm further along, I'll take another opportunity and go back. Hi, Dennis. And see what becomes of it. And something might and something might not. But it was a magical experience at the time, because all it was about for me was that it just takes one that you know, and I've met a lot of other people. I met at that same event, there was the CEO of Yahoo was there, Vanilla Ice, who I've been pestering for an interview on the show for like a year and a half. And, you know, we're getting closer to maybe that happening. But, you know, so there's so many things that happen at one event that it's not just about one person, and it's not about, you know, even in sales, I say to people, it's not about the dollars. It's not about getting that sale. Sometimes it's a mentor relationship. It's advice that they give you, that you just don't know what magic can come from connections and relationships. So you got to think beyond that. But certainly in terms of your question, you know, take the shot while it's there, but take it in terms of just building rapport and a connection. Then you can always go back later on down the track with what you have that's at a more prepared stage.
All right. Last question in the front.
Hi. Excellent talk, by the way. I really appreciate it. Is there ever a time where you kind of lose sight of your vision and you need to like ground yourself and reevaluate kind of your direction, or you get like hypersocial and you kind of need some alone time, kind of thing like that?
Okay. So hypersocial, you know, I'm more extroverted nowadays. I love people. I feed off people and the energy. But as I've gotten older and I do more and more work with more and more people, so before it was like one on one and I'd see maybe 50 people a week, now it's one to many and thousands. I definitely find I have to pull back more and recharge, and I have to be willing to take time to go into the cave and regenerate. So going to Hawaii over Christmas was a really big break for me. And the first part of your question was the vision. So in terms of maintaining the vision, and do I ever lose focus of the vision? Yes, when I let fear creep in. Fear is insidious, and it will be the thing that tells you that you're crazy and you can't speak, or you have one bad speaking job and then all of a sudden, I can't do this, I'm the worst speaker in the world. Or you get one bad review. You know, so fear is the only time I think people lose sight of their vision, when they let that creep in and be the truth. You know, everyone, there's that comment that a lot of people make all of the time that I failed, and everyone, I hear all the time people saying everyone's had failure in their life. Well, I honestly haven't. I don't like that term that people think they have to fail, because I kept going. Failure is if you sit on the mountain and you decide you're too tired and you go back down. Failure is when you're sitting there crying because you cut your knees and you scraped yourself and you decide that, you know, you're too injured, so you go back down. But if you just sit there and you take a rest and you take a pause and you talk to yourself and you figure out what it is you need and you keep going, it might take 10 years, but you will always get to the top of your mountain, and what a view it is up there. Well, thank you all for having me. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.